Support for Newsworthy comes from Enlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at Enlivion.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Friday, April 18th, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster says he's heartbroken after a school bus crash yesterday in Chester County. One person was killed when a bus carrying students from Pine Ridge Middle School in Lexington County blew a tire and flipped on Interstate 77, returning from a field trip in the Charlotte area. The Rock Hill Herald reports the bus was carrying about 35 students and four adults when it crashed. One of the occupants on the bus died, according to South Carolina Highway Patrol. The victim's identity has not yet been released. Chester County Emergency Management reported that 21 students were transported to the hospital from the bus that flipped. The North Carolina Senate passed its $32.6 billion budget proposal Thursday. The bill would give small raises and bonuses to teachers and state employees. It also sets aside $700 million for Hurricane Helene relief. Republican Senate Leader Phil Berger said wasteful programs and vacant positions across the state government will be cut.
It is the right budget for North Carolina at this time.
The budget expands income tax cuts that nonpartisan budget analysts have warned against. Democratic Minority Leader Sidney Batch said that's wrong.
Right now, North Carolina needs a record investment in its people because our house is on fire.
Four Democrats voted with Republicans in the Senate in passing the proposed budget. One Republican broke with his party over new ferry tolls the state would impose if the budget passes. The House is expected to propose its version of the budget next month. Early this month, FEMA announced plans to cancel a suite of grants to help communities combat flooding. In North Carolina, many municipalities have already invested millions to start the projects. None have received a federal dime. Zachary Turner visited a pump station in Salisbury to learn more.
When aluminum giant Alcoa built a dam downstream from the Hanna Ferry pump station, it slowed down the river upstream and led to more flooding at the station, according to Salisbury Row and Utilities Director Jason Wilson.
It's the chain link fence during a flood event, so we actually have to open gates from the boat to be able to get in here, or in some cases have actually just kind of floated over top of the fence. And this is, an 8 or 10 foot tall fence.
That pump serves 53,000 customers in Rowan County. When it floods, the utility must cut power to the station. FEMA awarded Salisbury a $22.5 million grant to relocate its pump station to higher ground. The city has already spent $3 million to apply for permits and develop a plan. The city still hopes to move forward with the project, with patchwork grants, or at the very worst, paying out of pocket. FEMA had already given the green light to more than 40 other such projects in North Carolina. All left high and dry. Zachary Turner, WFAE News.
North Carolina's Innocence Inquiry Commission, a small state agency that investigates prison inmates' claims that they were wrongfully convicted, would lose all funding under a budget proposal approved this week by the North Carolina Senate. WRAL reports the commission has exonerated more than a dozen people wrongly convicted of murder, rape, and other serious crimes since its creation in 2006. Senate Republican lawmakers say it hasn't handled enough cases to be worth the investment in a year when they're trying to cut costs. A Wilmington lawmaker is pushing for legislation that would make a chemical manufacturer pay for drinking water treatment updates. In 2017, reports showed that Chemours and predecessor DuPont had been discharging forever chemicals into the Cape Fear River for decades. Wilmington area utilities then started to explore how to filter them. The Cape Fear Public Utility Authority spent nearly $83 million installing granular activated carbon, and Brunswick County has spent almost $160 million upgrading a treatment plant. Representative Ted Davis, a Wilmington Republican, says ratepayers are bearing the burden of these projects.
Right now, the ratepayers are responsible for the cost that incurred by that public utility authority in order to remove the PFAS contamination that was put in there by the polluter.
Davis has unsuccessfully pushed for bills twice before that would make Chemours pay cleanup costs. The House Agriculture Committee signed off on the bill Tuesday, sending it to the Chamber's Appropriations Committee. The Sullenberger Aviation Museum will open a new exhibit next month and feature a longtime flight attendant for American Airlines. Kenneth Lee has more.
The museum's latest exhibit, Aviation City, will dive into Charlotte's aviation past and present, including the city's long history with American Airlines. Notably, the exhibit will feature a section for Carol Fair, who was American Airlines' most tenured flight attendant with a career spanning over six decades. Fair, who still flies today, says the changes in commercial aviation have been a highlight of her career.
The elevation of flight, you know, how it's from a DC-3 to a big A330 with almost 300 passengers. When we had 24 little passengers on a DC-3, it's just amazing how it's evolved.
Fair was also part of the industry when flight attendants' rights were much different. Up until the 1980s, stewardess often couldn't be married and could only work until they were 32. The new exhibit will open to the public on May 31st. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
Concord Paget Regional Airport is losing several nonstop flight routes. The Charlotte Observer reports Avelo Airlines is canceling six routes at the end of this month from the regional facility. The budget airline will no longer fly from Concord to Nashville, Daytona Beach, Albany, New York, and Lakeland Linder International Airport in Florida. The airline is also no longer moving forward with flights to Washington Dulles and Detroit. Both of those routes were announced in March and were set to begin in May. The city of Davidson is getting a new police chief. The town announced this week that Kimber Davidson is retiring. He was appointed in January of 2023. Captain Philip Geiger will become the new chief on May 2nd. He's a 14-year veteran of the Davidson Police Department. If you still haven't gotten around to filing your taxes and you're a North Carolina resident, you can take a deep breath. You've got even more time to get your filing together. The IRS Thursday again extended the deadline for North Carolina residents to file federal taxes from May 1st to September 25th, citing the lingering effects of Hurricane Helene. North Carolina has also extended its deadline to file state taxes to May 1st. However, if you owe the government money, you may still have to pay interest, which started accruing this week. The Trump administration's efforts to cut the Federal Department of Education have prompted concerns about funding for special education, including for some services that exist outside of the classroom. James Farrell learned about the Exceptional Children's Assistance Center, a federally funded nonprofit that helps parents navigate the complicated world of special education.
When Breska Larisma learned her nearly three-year-old daughter was on the autism spectrum, her family was swept into an entirely unfamiliar world.
So we didn't know anything about that stuff. We had not met anyone else who was on the spectrum, and so it was a big shock.
Larisma's daughter was set up with services in Danbury, Connecticut. The family moved to the Lake Norman area in 2016 with plans to enroll in pre-K in the Iredell-Statesville School District. But they found that simply continuing the same services she was receiving in Connecticut was more complicated than they'd expected. While all schools are required to provide disability services, they often vary in how they meet those obligations, which can lead to confusion.
We thought it was going to be, you know, a continuation of what we had gone through in Danbury. So being in that shock and not knowing enough about everything, just knowing that I'm supposed to advocate for my kid, but I don't know enough to advocate, I felt very weak.
Between things like IEPs, 504s, FAPE, and IDEA, the special education world is a concoction of acronyms, rules, regulations, and, at times, disputes between families and educators over whether kids are getting the services they're owed. That's why every state is required by federal law to have at least one federally funded Parent Training and Information Center, or PTI. It's a free resource center that teaches families how to understand the system. Here in North Carolina, that's the Exceptional Children's Assistance Center, or ECAC, in Davidson. Larisma called the group. Amy Combs, now ECAC's executive director, accompanied Larisma at her next meeting with district officials. And together they worked out a plan that worked for her daughter.
And I'll tell you, that meeting was the best thing, you know, that happened, because I had support. She was helping me. She was educating me.
The Trump administration's plans to shutter the Federal Department of Education has sparked some concern about what might happen to special education funding, including funding for things like this program. Here's Combs, ECAC's executive director.
Everything that we do for families is at no cost. And so most of our day is spent providing individual assistance to families that are, you know, experiencing conflict or there's confusion about what their rights are or what options they may have available to them or what resources may be available to them.
PTI centers are different from other advocacy organizations in that they must serve the full range of disabilities. They are also required by law to have a board that consists mostly of parents of children with disabilities. Combs says 12 of ECAC's 13 board members qualify.
All of our staff that are serving families, interacting with families, are parents of children with disabilities. And I think that creates a layer of trust with the families that we're serving.
ECAC fields parent calls and emails. They might also help families prepare for meetings with school administrators, or in some cases, like Larisma's, attend them. They also post video resources, like this webinar on individualized education plans, or IEPs.
So welcome, everyone. So today we are going to do a segment on IEP roadmaps.
This one from 2023.
So my back to school tip for parents would be to make sure that you have all your paperwork in order. So
a vast majority of ECAC's funding comes from grants. Roughly 45% of its $1.8 million budget comes from the Department of Education.
We've got some other grants that are state contracts, but at the end of the day, are funneled from the feds. And so it makes it a little scary for us as we're, you know, reading all the headlines and trying to make heads or tails and say, well, what's true, what's accurate, and then how does it affect us and how does it affect the families that we serve?
So far, there's been no indication of whether or not PTI centers might be impacted by the Trump administration's efforts to shutter the Department of Education. Trump has said special education will shift to the Department of Health and Human Services, though the specifics of that plan remain unclear. The Department of Education did not respond to WFAE's request for comment. Larisma and her family have continued to rely on ECAC, including just last month for her son, who was diagnosed with ADHD. She homeschools her children now, so many of the headlines about the Department of Education haven't scared her. But she does worry about a world without resources like ECAC that help parents navigate the labyrinth of autism and other disabilities.
We didn't know anything about it. Nothing. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. Now, after 10 years of being in it, my tone of voice is a little calmer than it was. But it was, we didn't know what to do. We were very, very lost.
On one hand, Combs says PTI centers are written into statute, so it's hard to imagine a move to eliminate the program. But she points to something else that's also written into statute, the Federal Department of Education. James Farrell, WFAE News.
Beer expert Tom Acatelli, who grew up in Charlotte and went to UNC Chapel Hill, has a new book out called The Golden Age of Beer, which covers a different beer style for each of the 52 weeks of the year. In an excerpt from this week's new episode of Southbound, Acatelli speaks with Tommy Tomlinson about Southern beer drinking patterns, two Charlotte breweries he loves, and how he developed his taste.
Do you find that there are differences in sort of beer drinking patterns between in regions of the country? Like the Southern beer drinkers drink differently than people in the Northeast?
I would think that lighter styles, lighter tasting styles, are probably more popular in the South than they are up North. And what I mean by lighter styles, I mean like, you know, like the Helles, like the Pilsners, like Kolsch, which was another beer that was sort of resurrected again to compete with Pilsner. So yeah, I'm thinking of like St. Arnold in what was the first craft brewery in Texas. And they had a lager called Lawnmower Beer because basically that, you know, it was sort of a joke on, you know, it was a sort of beer, lighter beer that you would drink while you're mowing your lawn in the hot Southern sun.
Are there Southern breweries that you particularly like any places in particular that you could think of that are doing really good work?
Oh, I don't want to leave anybody out.
Well, yeah, I know. With the understanding that, yeah, you're not going to get to
Yeah. I love the Noda Brewery in Mecklenburg County, I think it's, yeah.
Sure.
Charlotte Noda is fantastic. Old Mecklenburg is great.
Sure.
They make a copper ale. I can't remember the style.
I think it's just called copper.
Yeah, it's an alt beer. It's a German alt is German for old, and it's sort of a throwback to, you know, the maltier, sort of heavier lager style. So that's one that I really like. Sweetwater, I think, is out of Atlanta, right? They're fantastic. But yeah, there's a lot going on in the South as far as beer, and it's always interesting to visit and to see it. It's going through earlier iterations of evolution than different parts of the country have gone through already. Like the West Coast, you know, they're especially California, Oregon, Washington State, they're in, you know, third generation of this, right? You know, the South is maybe one and a half, two generations. So it's interesting to see that.
So I want to talk a little bit about kind of your background and how all this happened for you. But sir, I can't help but ask this question. Do you remember your first beer?
Yeah. All right. I just want to correct myself. Alt beer is a lager. It's not a lager. It's an ale. But
Okay. We'll get it.
Do I remember my first beer? It was probably like Budweiser or something like that. I did not come from a beer household. My parents rarely drank anything. And if they did, they were the children of Italian immigrants. So it was usually wine, red wine. I can't remember the very first, but I do remember getting into like Pete's Wicked and Sam Adams. And there were some other, you know, early craft beers or craft offerings from the big guys. Like, you know, I remember Blue Moon being popular. That's a Coors production. And I remember, yeah, these beers I got into when I was in college at UNC.
You can find the full episode of this week's Southbound, as well as more episodes in which Tommy Tomlinson interviews notable Southerners, online at WFAE.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And for Friday, April 18th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.